If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
It is a civil trial. And of course, if you are following us on the Hidden Killers podcast, you know we are covering it for you, bringing you the audio every day of the case that's going on in Newport News right now involving the school teacher who was shot by a six-year-old. There will be a criminal trial that's coming up later in November. Stay tuned. We'll bring you all of the details on that, too. But right now, it is civil. But sitting in that courtroom in Newport News, it doesn't feel civil. It feels like an autopsy. An autopsy of a system that heard every warning, saw every red flag, and then turned away until the sound of a gunshot forced them to look. Oh, yes, another fine shooting story in America. This is a case of Abby Zwirner versus Ebony Parker. The teacher was shot, and she is taking on the assistant principal, who allegedly did nothing to stop it. This is not a case of the teacher who was shot against the six-year-old. Mom in this case has already been charged and has her sentence. This is the case of the administration doing what administrations and schools do best. And if you're a teacher, an educator in this system that is not part of administration watching right now, you're going, what do they do best? Starts with an N. Nothing. Yes, let the problem fester until something horrible happens. $40 million in damages are on the table and a moral debt that can't be measured. You already know how this started. January 6th of 2023, Richneck Elementary School, a six-year-old boy brings his mother's 9mm pistol into his first grade classroom. He pulls it out at a reading table and shoots his teacher, Abby Zwirner, in the chest and hand. The bullet rips through her palm, lodges in her torso, collapses a lung, and somehow she still gets her students out of the room before she collapses in the hallway, bleeding out. She lives, barely, and she never teaches again. That's the part most people know. What the jury is learning now is everything that came before the shot. And maybe you don't know this part either because, maybe you don't. It's important to know this, though, because that morning wasn't quiet. It was filled with warnings. Teachers and staff went to Assistant Principal Ebony Parker four separate times, each more urgent than the last, telling her that something was wrong. One teacher said the boy had threatened another student earlier that day. Another said she saw him shove something heavy into his backpack. A reading specialist told Parker she believed the child had a gun and asked permission to search him. That's where the world we live in today, kids. I know it, you. I didn't. Yeah. You have to go get, if you think the kid has a gun, you have to go get permission to search him. Yeah, we're really protecting our children well, aren't we? According to testimony, Parker said no, that she couldn't authorize the search. And besides, his pockets are just too small. Yeah. Four people, we think the kid has a gun. There's a problem here. Something weird is in his pocket. He's threatening kids. Let's not just take a look, just to be sure. That phrase is now the ghost haunting the trial. Too small. Four warnings, four missed chances. Hours later, a gun went off. Abby Zwirner sat on the witness stand last week, hands folded, voice steady but shaking around the edges. She described looking down and seeing blood pouring from her hand, then realizing she couldn't breathe. "I thought I had died," she told the jury. "I thought I was either on my way to heaven or in heaven, and then it all got black." Six surgeries later, a bullet fragment still lodging near her spine, and she still can't open a jar or hold a water bottle properly. Her left hand doesn't work the way it used to. She can't teach. The classroom triggers panic attacks. This woman in her early to mid-20s. Life ahead of her. Excited about being a teacher. Excited to continue her teaching career. And now the very thing that she loved doing, that she was proud of doing, that she was meant to do. And when you watch her testimony, when you see, you know, this is someone who's born to be an elementary teacher. She's just that type of person. Now that very thing that she loved is so triggering, she can't do it. Take the thing you love doing most, the thing you get the most fulfillment of. And because some moron in administration doesn't want to take something seriously, that ruins it for you for the rest of your life. And you're so lucky that you even have a life at this point because of that horrible, idiotic, dumbass decision by the administration at the school district. And I know there's so many teachers watching this right now going, "Oh my God, I could totally see this happening in my district. I could totally see it happening with the administrators that we have." Start calling them out. Start exposing them. Because until they are exposed, this shit's just going to keep happening. Expose the incompetence. Don't be afraid. Incompetence needs to be heard. Even if it's small things, there's ways. Every loud sound now feels like a gunshot to her. And of course, why wouldn't it? When she finished testifying, the courtroom was silent. Even the defense looked down. Then came the parade of teachers and staff. Everyone gave the same story from a slightly different angle. They warned Parker. They asked her to act, and she didn't. The reading specialist, a woman named Kimberly, described walking into Parker's office that day, saying she believed the child had a gun and asking to check his bag herself. Parker's answer, "No, you can't search a student. We'll handle it." But nothing was handled. Kimberly's voice cracked on the stand. She said she still sees Abby's blood when she closes her eyes. A guidance counselor testified next. She said he went to Parker after hearing that a teacher had seen the boy hide something in his backpack. He expected immediate action, maybe a lockdown, maybe a police call. Instead, he was told to go back to class. So the guidance counselor, Kenny, why is this bitch the gatekeeper of the backpack? Why does this one person have to make this call? This is the bureaucracy and insanity that we are living in, obviously in so many places, but yes, in our school system. Probably the same reason why it took nearly 300 officers standing outside Uvalde School in Texas and no one would go inside for the one teenager with the gun as he was slowly picking off children. Bureaucracy. Got to get the permission. Got to do this. Got to do that. I'm not blaming these teachers here. They were doing, again, what they were told, and administration fails once again. The jurors have heard about that morning minute by minute. Each conversation with Parker, each ignored warning, stitched together in a timeline that ends in gunfire. The defense attorney for Parker keeps hammering one point. This was unforeseeable bullshit. There's no reasonable person could predict a six-year-old would shoot a teacher. That hindsight is cruel, and Parker did what she thought was right with the information she had. That is the argument that she is making. They say she's being scapegoated by the district, desperate to save its own skin. Maybe she is, but at the same point, she made a horrible choice. Let me tell you something. One of my very first reporting things, it involves something similar to this. Thank God nothing horrible happened. It was right after Columbine. I was a senior in high school when that was going down. And I worked in media. And I got a hold of a threat letter. This is 1999-ish, right around there, 2000. Got a hold of it. I brought it to the school. Hey, what you guys doing? Oh, we're just going to talk to him about that. We're going to handle it internally. Really? Because this seems kind of serious. Like, and I knew the kid that was making the threat, and I knew the kid gloves they dealt with. And I knew the administration did not want any sort of negative attention towards them. It might hold them accountable. And when I got that response, I took it to my news director, and it was on the 5 o'clock news about an hour later. I take this shit seriously. And it's amazing that all these years later, we are still living in an environment where that fucking teacher, the vice principal, could in somehow right mind think, it's okay. Cannot possibly be that. You've come up in a world where this is commonplace now. I got to give mine maybe a little bit of grace back in 1999 because this wasn't a weekly occurrence. But still held their feet to the fire. And nobody's asking me to do anything crazy. It's just do your fucking job. What a novel idea. The problem is the evidence doesn't back up the story that there was no way to prevent this. No reasonable person could predict a six-year-old would shoot a teacher. You're right, they couldn't. Until four of your staff members says there's something suspicious in their bag, one of them says it's a gun. And you're still like, huh? A special grand jury convened long before the civil case began, documented a long history of violent incidents involving the same child. Ooh, surprise, surprise. They let him just keep coming back, didn't they? Including an episode where he choked a teacher. Let's just keep letting him come back to school. Hope parents make better choices. The grand jury's conclusion, administrative failures made the shooting entirely preventable. That phrase, entirely preventable, has shown up again and again during testimony, because that's what this trial really is, a fight over whether inaction can be negligence and whether negligence can be worth $40 million. One of the most emotional witnesses so far was a parent volunteer who happened to be near the office that morning. She testified that after the first warning came in, Parker looked distracted, overwhelmed. She said Parker brushed it off, saying, "We'll handle it after lunch." Yeah, like that's something you can handle after lunch. Those words hang heavy now, because after lunch, Abby's runner was in the hospital. The courtroom has become a study in contrast. Zwerner sits quietly, her left arm wrapped, eyes fixed straight ahead. Parker, on the other side, mostly avoids looking at her. When the jury watches them both, they're seeing two different kinds of power, one that acted instinctively to protect others and one that didn't act at all and now really wants to cover their ass. Medical experts took the stand next. Doctors described the bullet's path, the surgeries, the long-term impairment. A hand surgeon showed x-rays. A trauma specialist explained how the lung collapse could have killed her within minutes if paramedics hadn't arrived when they did. The prosecution asked how long recovery would take, and the answer? The rest of her life. And then came the psychologist. He described classic symptoms of post-traumatic stress, flashbacks, anxiety, depression, loss of purpose. He said Zwerner has nightmares about the classroom. When asked if she'll ever return to teaching, he paused before saying, "Highly unlikely." The defense objected, arguing the testimony was speculative. The judge overruled. The jury saw the look on Abby's face when the psychologist said it. You can't object to that kind of truth. A civil trial is unusual because a judge already ruled it could bypass Virginia's workers' compensation system. He decided that being shot by a student is not a risk peculiar to teaching. That ruling opened the door for this lawsuit. And it's sending shockwaves through school districts nationwide. If Parker loses, administrators everywhere may suddenly realize that we followed policy isn't enough to keep them safe from personal liability. Thank God, because your policies suck. The defense has tried to humanize Parker. They describe her as a career educator, a mother, a woman overwhelmed by a chaotic morning. They've called coworkers who said she was calm, not careless, that she relied on others, that the district's procedures were unclear, that no one could have predicted a gun in a first grade classroom. Really? Because you know what? I got a kid in school. She's not elementary now. But every day she was in elementary, just like I think every parent out there that sends their children off every single morning can predict a gun in the classroom, and it doesn't matter what grade it's in. So if the damn vice principal can't predict that, I'm sorry, there's a lovely position for you at Denny's. The Rudy Tootie Fresh and Fruity is all ready for you to start serving up every morning. If you can't predict a gun in your classroom. Because it's every parent's worst fear every day that we send our children to school. Because it's a very distinct and real possibility. And if you can't predict that shit, again, Denny's is hiring. But then the plaintiff's team plays the timeline again. The warnings stack up. The pockets comments echoes through the classroom. And the jury keeps seeing the same pattern. People raising alarms, Parker doing nothing, and a teacher bleeding out because of it. So far, no one has testified that Parker even called the police that day. I'm sure someone did. No one remembers her calling for a lockdown. No one recalls her even leaving her office to check on the child. Her inaction is the story. All of these allegations, by the way, allegedly, okay? She has her criminal trial later in the month. The defense is hoping that fatigue will set in, that jurors will start thinking, we get it, she messed up, and stop listening. But that hasn't happened. Each witness adds a new dimension to the negligence, and the cumulative effect is devastating. The testimony also shows how culture, not just one person, made this possible. Teachers testified that they'd been told to be cautious about disciplining students. They worried about parental backlash, lawsuits, and accusations of bias. This is something I know every single teacher out there deals with every single day, and it's freaking maddening, and that's why we have the problems that we have, and that's why teachers are leaving in droves, and that's why you have zombie monsters coming out of high school at the end of the day. We're like, why don't they act like other adults? Why can't they seem to like get this down? Because they've been living in Lord of the Flies for the last 18 years of their lives. Well, we've all said, well, check the box, show up for the plays, good grades. Okay, great. Did you see how low the standards are to get those good grades, by the way, half the time? The fear of overreacting in the United States school districts is paralysis. And that paralysis ends with gunshots. That's the real virus running through American schools, fear of being wrong. And it's on full display in this courtroom. The trial has also shown glimpses of Abby's Warner's quiet strength. When the defense cross-examined her, they asked if she'd ever felt unsafe before that day in the classroom, and she said no. Not because she didn't sense danger, but because she believed the adults around her would do their jobs. Oh, what a crazy thought you have, Abby, that they might do their jobs. I know it's a crazy thought that we all have. Her voice didn't crack until she said that last line. Belief in the system was her first mistake. Trusting it almost cost her life. And as of this week, the jury has heard opening statements, medical testimony, and witness after witness confirming that the school was warned repeatedly. Body cam footage of the aftermath was played outside the jury's presence while the court debated its admissibility. Reporters who saw it described it as chaotic, bloody, and unforgettable. The defense wants to keep it out. Too prejudicial. I know they're doing their job. But everyone knows what that means. It's too powerful to deny. It shows that ignoring warnings, what it looks like in real time. So what happens next? Well, the defense is expected to call its own experts, administrators, policy specialists, perhaps Parker herself. If she testifies, it'll be the most watched moment of the trial. The question everyone wants answered is, why didn't you act? Because no policy manual, no legal argument, no lawyerly phrasing can soften that question. It's the moral center of this case. Why didn't you act? The verdict will come later, but the impact is already visible. School boards are reviewing threat response policies. Teachers are watching, wondering if someone will finally stand up for them. Parents are realizing how fragile the word safe really is. And in that courtroom, one woman sits, listening to every excuse, waiting for the world to call her trauma what it truly was, preventable. Abby Zwirner didn't sign up to be a symbol. She just wanted to teach first grade to make kids feel safe enough to learn. We didn't talk about that at all. Let's think about all the kids who witnessed their teacher getting shot. You want to talk about a little trauma there? Good job, VP. Instead, we're dealing with the results of school districts. I'd like to throw the word safe around when safety becomes a slogan instead of a priority. The defense keeps calling this a tragedy. They want to humanize Parker to make negligence look like compassion misunderstood, but you can't call it a tragedy when there were four clear opportunities to stop it. That's not tragedy. That's a decision. And decisions have consequences. Every day this trial continues, that message gets louder. That policy doesn't excuse paralysis. That bureaucracy doesn't erase accountability. And when warnings go ignored, blood flows. The jury will decide how much that is worth in dollars. But outside that courtroom, in every school office in America, the verdict's already in. Give me your thoughts in the comment section, especially if you're a teacher. Love to hear your thoughts. Love to hear your stories of what the hell goes on in your own districts. Because I know this is a problem everywhere. So it's Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. To find us, and please do press subscribe wherever you get podcasts, social media, wherever it is, please do hit subscribe. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.